This is The Real, episode 6 of season 7 of the GNU World Order. Hi everyone, this is Klaatu, this is the GNU World Order, this is my show about Linux, about GNU, about technology, about all that kind of high-tech and cool stuff that you love to hear about, and I like to talk about and to hear about as well. Careful listeners will notice that I said this is The Real season 7, episode 6, at the beginning of the show. The reason I said real is because I already recorded episode 6, actually. And that recording will be coming out later, probably as episode 7 or 8, to be honest. So it's going to be funny when you hear it, because I'm talking about this Usenix Lisa conference that happened, quote, just 2 weeks ago, and it's actually going to be, like, 2 months ago. But whatever. I wanted to do this episode, the current one that you're listening to right now, because of its proximity with the episode that I just did on video editing workflow, or I should say, not even just video editing, but video production, post-production workflow. Got a couple good comments about that. Artists, I think, found it helpful, which is what I was hoping for, and non-artists just found it informative and interesting to hear about, which is also what I was hoping would occur. So, Guitar Man in IRC, and you will probably know that name if you're not in IRC, from the Tilts, that funny Tilts theme song that they play, and his own mug cast. So Guitar Man spoke to me about the video workflow episode, and I asked him if he knew if anyone, maybe from his old, from the show that he used to be on called Open Source Musicians Podcast, that might be able to talk to me about the audio production workflow on Linux. Because I think it would be kind of cool to get both sides of those disciplines in multimedia and kind of just discuss how it's done on Linux. Is it different than it's done on non-free software, and if so, in what way? Well, he went out of his way to find someone for me to talk to. I really appreciate it. He got Holstein from the Open Source Musicians podcast to talk to me, and, you know, I didn't even realize until I started talking to Holstein that I'd never actually talked to him before. I mean, I kind of, for some reason, was thinking he was Pipe Man Music, even though the nick is completely different, and they're both on Open Source podcast and they're two individual people, but I kept thinking that I knew Holstein, but actually I didn't know Holstein. I knew the name from the show, and I've talked to Pipe Man Music in IRC, so somehow I merged those two personalities. But hey, whatever, things get confusing when you are talking to people and then hearing their voices in your head, because at the same time that you're talking to them in IRC, you're listening to their show. It gets really, really strange. Which, for the record, is one of the great things about Linux and Unix conferences. If you have not been to a conference or an exposition or anything like that, then you should probably try to go to one. I know that Southern California Linux Expo is coming up really, really soon. I think it's going to be, I know that it's an exciting show. I've been there once. I wanted to go there again this time. They actually accepted a talk proposal that I submitted to them on Cadian Live. I am not going to be able to get out there though because of work schedule and traveling and lots. I've already done a lot of traveling in the past couple of months, and there's going to be a major network upgrade at my work, so I kind of need to be here for that, it was actually supposed to happen this month. It's not happening until next month. It's kind of a drag, but don't let that stop you from going to Southern California Linux Expo if that's in your area. It is well worth it, and the reason I kind of mention it is because through the expositions and the expos and the fests and the conferences, you get to meet the people who you're talking to, and you get to place a name and kind of some experience, some real-life experience with that person, and they become a lot more real, because otherwise they're just kind of like that psychiatrist or psychologist in Emacs. You know, they're just these little lines of text on your screen, or maybe they're sounds in your ears, but it's nothing really solid to grasp onto. But anyway, it was fun to talk to Holstein, and it was really, really informative, and that's what I'm going to play for you right now, that interview that I had with him. But before I start that, before I press play on that recording, I want to again mention, and I do mention this in the interview, I think, but I want to say it again, and that is that Open Source Musicians, the podcast, sure, but especially the channel, the IRC channel on irc.freenode.net, Open Source Musicians, they are an amazing, amazing resource. I don't even know how to fathom what kind of community they've built just in that channel. And maybe they have forums and stuff, I don't really know, but that channel is just amazing. It's got serious, serious people who know what they're talking about, like the finer details of audio production on any platform, but especially on Linux. And I think I've probably told this story before when I was doing one of the Fat Chance Lester albums. Couldn't figure out why a hard limiter was acting the way that it was. And so I went in and asked if anyone knew about that aspect of this particular LADSPA plugin. And I kid you not, one of the guys downloaded the source code of the LADSPA plugin and looked at it and was able to tell me exactly how it was doing its calculations and stuff. Where else are you going to get that? That's just mind-blowing. So if you're into audio production, audio file type of stuff, Open Source Musician IRC channel is just fantastic. The podcast is great. They haven't released in a while, but that channel is just fantastic. It's probably literally one of the places that I could point to when I'm telling people, no, community support, it really works. That would be one of the places. LinuxQuestions.org is one for general questions. But if they're doing audio production, point to that channel, because it's no joke. They're there. They know what they're talking about. They're nice about what they're talking about. You know, they're not at all judgmental or argumentative or anything like that. So it's a real resource to the entire community. And I list them on Slacker Media, the website. I point to their IRC. I list them in the Fat Chance Lester album notes as basically contributors to the project, because in my mind, that's what they are. They helped me out when I was engineering the album. So, you know, they get credit for it. So they're great. Great bunch of guys. Go talk to them. Go hang out with them if you want to. Lots of cool people are in there, and a lot of them really, really know what they're talking about. And if you're looking to get into audio, go in there and lurk. They mention things that I've never heard of just in passing. They'll just throw out a new plugin that I'm just like, wow, that's really cool. I've never heard of that before. So, really, check that out. But for now, check out this great holiday interview. For this one, I think I'll cue the big corporate introduction to make it sound really, really official. So, incidentally, we actually did this interview live in front of a studio audience, so sit back and enjoy. Hi, everyone. Welcome to GNU World Order. Tonight, I have a very special guest on the show, Holstein from Open Source Musicians Podcast. How are you, Holstein?
I'm happy to be here, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on. So let me ask you, did you, a little bit off topic, I guess, did you go to, like, music school and stuff, or, like, what's your background?
I went to school for percussion as a, you know, a music major to be okay. Education, and I switched to bass and dropped out and just started gigging and got into jazz and composition and asking questions and learning, yeah. And then I found, of course, you know, you start trying to record your own stuff and your own bands, and I don't know, I got real frustrated with trying to find software and also find studios to do what I wanted to do in.
Right.
Back then, it's not like it is now where you can go in for 40 or 50 bucks an hour and get some really good stuff, but...
Yeah, because they're desperate now.
Yeah, yeah, and also the tools, you know, when I found all these FOSS tools, it's like, what is all that? But I couldn't, you know, I needed to... As I'm a musician, I'm not a coder or a
right.
computer. I mean, I am now. I've kind of become one, but I had to definitely find, like the Open Source Musicians guys, you know, they really helped me out a lot, getting Jack running and all that. Just the basics, you know, and then taking time and figuring out what I'm doing.
Well, actually, yeah.
But
so
I still am.
Give me the history of Open Source Musicians Podcast. I think I found it like halfway through its life.
Right.
So I don't know who started it. I know Guitar Man was on for a while, and then it was...
Yeah,
you know,
Steve,
what's the
Guitar
yeah, what's
Man,
the,
Steve Baer.
Yeah.
Dan started... Pipe Man. Dan started out... And what was his friend's name? The guy that was on... Is it Chris? I can't remember. They just did a couple of episodes at the beginning, and then...
Yeah, I probably never heard
those.
And
then Guitar Man got in, and they ran it for a long time, and then it kind of...
Yeah, when did you get into the show?
That must have been... It was when Steve started doing his own show. He was doing like a beer cast.
Oh, that's right.
He just... over that must have been a year ago, I guess. And I don't know. I mean, it's just a great community of people. But you know, we've been... There's been like three... Like we were talking earlier, I mean, there was like 3 or 4 months now since we put a show out. But
yeah,
there's always a core of group of people in the channel
yeah,
who can put out content. You know?
Yeah,
there's,
and... And honestly,
12
I mean,
or 15 of us like sharing content.
Yeah, and honestly, as much as I love a good podcast, the thing to me that open source musicians offers at this point is just a killer IRC channel. I was shocked. I was working on some of my little albums. I just had like little random questions about engineering, little things like that. I dropped in there and just people blew me away with some of their answers. The knowledge base is unbelievable.
In that channel, man, there's all kinds of different professionals. There's electronics musicians, there's coders, there's Debian users, Arch users. No distro, you know, all distros are represented, all kinds of different guys. I mean, it's an amazing community.
It seems like there are even distro maintainers who kind of hang out there, right? I mean, the Ubuntu
distro maintainers,
studio guy,
package maintainers, professional studio guys. I mean, you name it. We've got somebody that can help you with whatever you're into.
Yeah, so I urge everyone on a regular basis, and I even link to the site and the channel from a couple of my websites and web projects. So yeah, it's like one of those resources that I really believe in strongly. So, you know, good going everyone at Open Source Musicians. A couple of weeks ago on this very show that you are on right now, I gave a really verbose overview of the video post-production workflow, meaning everything from, you know, after you're finished shooting to the very initial edit to the kind of special effects to just every step of the way. So I was hoping that someone with a lot more audio experience might be able to chat with me a little bit about the audio workflow on free software.
Sure, I'd love to.
One thing that's always kind of been a mystery to me, and I've gotten some input on this from a couple of other people, but how you kind of like conceptualize the overall piece. Like, do you do a basic piano track first and then kind of dub stuff over that? Or how do you start out? Where does it start for you usually?
That's a good question. And I relate that to exactly the way I think when I'm composing a piece. And I don't think there's any rules for that. I know sometimes I personally don't do a lot of overdubbing projects. Sometimes I'll do the whole band and we'll just track everything all in one go, or I'll just do a solo piece myself.
Nice.
But if I'm overdubbing something, maybe I'll put the drums in, and then I'll put the bass, and then I'll put the lead instruments, and then maybe I go back and replace the drums again.
Okay.
And then maybe I replace the bass, and then maybe I have like 4, 5, 6 tracks going, and I just keep replacing them until they sound more like all those. I like to think of myself as being like a bunch of different musicians in some fake reality that doesn't happen, but you know, it gets more realistic as you record, because what we're talking about is you can notice the problems when people do it, and you notice the phase, like you'll hear the drums phase a little bit from the guitar, and you know, you just got to go in and fix it. There's
now,
no other way around it.
Do you do like looping or
I mess around very little with Super Looper, and I love it. I just, you know, I just haven't had time to get my mind around doing it, and I don't do it in my piece. I've taken very loops and just played over them, you know, but nothing to the extent of like what the people who really do that know what to do, you know.
What about punching in and punching out? Is there like ever just like a bar that you're just like, right there the drums kind of started to fall out, let me just do just that part?
It definitely depends. I mean, I'm a professional bass player, so
okay,
I usually do my bass parts all in one go. I mean, even if it's like that one little thing, I'll be like, yeah, I'll get it again. But if it's like, if I'm tracking a piano part, sometimes I'll just piece that thing together because I'm not a piano player and I want to get the part the way I wanted to get it in. So, you know, if I got to piece that together, even if I got to like play little pieces and like reconstruct it, I'll do it that way. But yeah, I try to make sure I either listen to it objectively or have somebody else check it out and make sure that it's not sounding contrived, you know, or just wrong.
Right. I guess that's kind of what I do sometimes, although I think I get nervous about being all those different parts, and so and I almost think that it's the wrong way of doing things. So it's kind of nice to hear that someone else sort of does that and has to put on a different hat for the different things that you're putting in together.
Yeah, I mean, ideally you would have a budget and you'd have a realized idea and you just hire guys and they come in and play it. But I mean, we don't all have that budget. So I think whatever it takes to get as close to that, whatever you're going for, that art in your head, you know, whatever it takes to get there, man, I think it's fine.
Okay, so you've got an idea for a song, right? You're a musician, you've got this great idea, you kind of hear it in your head. What's the first step that I guess maybe traditionally someone would take? And if it's different from what you as a you know, personally take, what's the first step that you do, Holstein?
Well, for me, it really just depends on what I'm going for. You know, I might do something so traditional as like get it out that I'm going to play on whatever instruments, then start tracking it, or I might just get instruments out and just start going for it. I think it depends on what I want at the end. But I guess those are two pretty seriously different workflows that we could talk about, because I know one way to do it is, you know, you get a piece of paper and you at least write down like a timeline of what's happening when, and
yeah,
and then you try to realize that maybe you get real into it, you have click tracks going along, and then you put the drums into that, and then you add on. It's just, you know, it's really up to the producer at that point, which is kind of you know, you're wearing all the hats, but it's really up to you to get it together.
Yeah, and actually you're right, those are two different workflows, but just like you, I've done both things. I mean, sometimes I'll be sitting in a class or something and I'll hear a tune in my head and I'll be like, wow, I really need to get that down, but now is not a convenient time. Just grab a piece of paper or something and kind of scribble in some notes as I approximate them, and then I go back later and try to play out what I scribbled down. Sometimes it's right, sometimes it's more or less right, and it's just enough to trigger what I was hearing in my head. And then other times it's just like I sit down in front of my audio software and start playing around. So what application do you typically use for the stage where you're actually playing music into your computer? What's your app of choice?
When I'm tracking, or if it's going to be the final product, or if I'm just grabbing things, mostly what I do is record acoustic instruments, either overdubbed or live. So I do everything in Ardour.
Okay, so I'm going to guess that since you are your own band, that you don't have one of those fancy audio cards with like 8 different inputs. Is that true?
Actually,
false,
you know,
or?
I do though, because I try to record my live. I've recorded a lot of live performances and it's worked out pretty
well.
I have like a HP Mini Note with FireWire input, and I have a Presonus FirePod with 8, you know, 8 preamps.
Wow.
And it's very, those preamps aren't great, but it's all right. And you know, if I'm overdubbing at the house, I have a Presonus Eureka preamp I use, and you know, then I can get a real nice channel going into Ardour.
Okay, so for people who aren't into open source musician, or
yes,
even musician stuff at all, what's the advantage there? Like, what are we getting? So we're getting like multi-tracks, even though we can get all of them on a separate stream, or what?
Like right now, when we're recording this, we have a microphone set up and it's going one track in. But what if you want to have, what if you want to have 4 tracks? What if you want to have the drums, the guitar, and the vocals, and the bass all at once? Then if you have 4 channels, and I have 8 channels into my rig right now.
Nice. So Ardour basically does just kind of, microphone into the computer. Does it have the capability now of doing the whole MIDI kind of like driving a synthesizer kind of thing, or no?
Ardour 3.
Ardour 3
does. And that's in, I think as of now, that's in beta.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. That'll be real soon. It's going to be fine. I'm excited about it. I haven't used it. I mean, I opened
right
up early alpha and was like, wow, it's cool, but I'm, you know, I got my own thing going on. So
I imagine if you're anything like me, and you might not be, but I mean, I imagine stability is a really big deal for you on your studio machines, like on the machines that drive your...
I totally agree with you.
Okay.
I'm nervous about it.
Yeah.
It keeps me up at night. I'm so worried about it. So what do you do to address that? What are you running?
I run everything on Slackware. So
okay.
I don't upgrade until Slackware upgrades, and then I do a pretty big system sort of overhaul.
And you, I mean, does that look like kind of a reinstallation and everything at that point? Or?
That's how I do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if I wanted to, I could do stuff out of the current folder on the Slackware servers and kind of do it like that. I've done that in the past. I prefer to just do basically a reinstall, because I mean, Slackware only releases a new version when Slackware releases a new version.
And you're comfortable. I know some. Well, for me, let me talk about my setup here. I'm running Ubuntu 10.04, the long-term support release.
Okay, yeah.
And for those who don't know what that means, the long-term support releases come out every 2 years, and those are supported for 3 years, which means that they are arguably more stable.
Yeah.
It's likely. A better term, I know Guitar Man Steve, he used this in a pod show I heard him do. He said that it's actually, stable is not a good word for it. It's actually more predictable.
Nice.
I think that's a very good way to put it.
Absolutely.
So anyway, I'm using the long-term support releases, and these PPA packages that Falk TX, he may have had a project called KX Studio.
Yeah, yeah, they talked about that a lot on the show.
Yeah, he's great. He's doing great stuff, and I think he's starting to package his stuff for Arch now.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, I use his PPAs, and I get new stuff in my older, stabler system.
Is that what KX Studio is, then? It's just like a bunch of PPAs that you install on top of Ubuntu?
Right now, it is. I don't think he has like an 11.10 release of KX Studio, but I might be wrong about that. I know he was talking about just going PPAs to not compete with Ubuntu Studio.
Right, okay.
Which I thought was very awesome, you know?
Yeah, well, I guess he and the Ubuntu Studio guy both kind of hang out in that open source musicians channel anyway. I think that's so
Scott
cool
Lander.
that it just kind of like, that channel just became like this meeting place of all these different people who work on the same thing. It's really cool. But I digress. So what non-free software is Ardour replacing for you, just maybe in case some people are listening to this who do know the other side?
I mean, for me, I guess the tool that other people that are doing what I'm doing are using is Pro Tools.
Okay.
Or what I came from was Cubase on Windows XP.
Oh, okay.
Or Nuendo, I think, is another one. But it's just
like
a fully functional, you know, digital audio workstation. The problem is, or not the problem, but the compromise has been that Ardour doesn't have MIDI like we were talking about earlier.
Right.
I mean, you can control it from MIDI, but that's all going to be added in Ardour 3. So
what are people? I mean, I use Qtractor, to be honest. I like Ardour. I love it, but I mean, Qtractor is kind of the one that meets my needs better because it does have that integrated MIDI plus the audio.
Right.
What are other people doing for MIDI if they're sort of married to Ardour? Are there ways to pipe in the MIDI stuff into Ardour then?
Yeah, you just use Jack and you can connect.
Oh, okay.
You know, you can connect your stuff, like let's say you wanted, I forget what the limitations are in Qtractor, which are not very, I like that program. I haven't
had really
the
slick
opportunity to work with it enough, but let's say there is something on the audio end that you're limited, and I forget what it is. It's not something like panning, it's something like automation, that's what
it was. Yeah, it was automation.
So,
but I think they have that now as of their very, very latest release.
So let's say that something in Qtractor is not quite meeting your needs as far as audio, and you wanted to use Ardour. You just put in with Jack, or a lot of people use Rose Garden and Ardour at the same time, or any sequencer, you know, whatever you're comfortable with. And that's what I love about the tools we're using. You got Jack running, everything's talking to each other.
What on earth is the equivalent of Jack on the non-free world? Do you have any idea?
I know, right? There actually is something, and I can't remember what it's called, but there's some kind of rack system like that. But you know, it doesn't communicate with everything.
Right.
It only communicates with what it's, you know, allowed, which is, you know, it's a business, but it's not communicating with everything on the system.
Yeah, I mean, it's very restrictive, which obviously, yeah, I guess that's not surprising at all. But that is something really great to get away from.
Oh. When I saw Jack running and I was like hooking up virtual cables between
people,
sign me up.
Yeah, and so like I don't know, it sounds like you probably had some or have some experience with physical hardware. If you've had that experience and then you see those little cables going back and forth, you're like, oh, I got it. You know, you just understand it.
Plus, you can when you're in an actual studio, you can just hook up whatever you want to hook up.
Yeah,
it's just like that.
Yeah.
You get a patch bay, you hook up what you want to hook up. There's no business dictating to me what I can hook up.
Oh, I can't play this keyboard because the cable doesn't go into the, you know, it doesn't
work. It's a quarter inch cable. That's what it was.
Yeah.
It's a MIDI cable. They're generic. Plug it in.
Yeah. Okay, so let's assume that we've recorded a bunch of music now. We've put it into Ardour. At this point, it probably still sounds pretty raw, even if we've gotten all the punch ins and punch outs, we've corrected all the little mistakes and stuff like that. What's the next step? Like I guess it's called the audio sweetening is probably what it would be called.
Yeah. I mean, you got to mix. Mixing can be, I mean, mixing can take a long time if you do it right, and it can also take another person. You know, a lot of people don't use the same person to mix. I mean, what we're talking about is this, like, overall, like, we're everything. Like I said earlier, like, the producer would do this, you know? You're the producer, you're the mixing engineer, you're the mastering guy, you're doing everything.
And the session musician.
And the session music, you know, you're everything, which is kind of, it's freeing in a lot of ways, and I don't think it's bad, it's just different. And I think it's a good idea to get other ears in the project, though. You know, if you have something going out professionally and you can afford to have someone else mix or master, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I mean, or even just get like a, well, yeah. I mean, honestly, I think in an ideal world, with a few exceptions, you'd have someone else doing some of that post-production because,
yes.
And I know that inevitably an artist is going to hear their old music from like last year and think, oh man, what was I thinking? I should have totally not had that out there. I should have had that below, you know, I should have had that lower and I should have brought up the bass or whatever.
Learn, you know, you'll learn, you learn a technique about EQ or something with compression and you're like, oh man, I could totally do that better now.
Yeah. Yeah. So in real life, like in a big setting, we would have composed the music one way or another, maybe laid down a Tim track. We would have hired some musicians or gotten our friends or whatever to play it. We would have recorded it into the computer. Then we would have passed that off to some fancy
mixing guy.
We don't do that. So what are we using for this? Is this all still in Ardour for you?
I still use Ardour. I use Ardour I export from that.
Okay, cool. What are some of the concerns that you, like, what are some of the basic sort of like must have, I mean, I don't know how much of a mixer you are, but like, what are some of the must have plugins that you would use for that?
You know,
sort of
I try
thing?
To keep it simple, you know, okay. I try to use like, but again, you know, I'm not doing a lot of electronic stuff. So
Right.
I can't really speak for like what people, I don't use a lot of effects.
Okay. I mean, I know for me, for instance, I use compressor a lot, like a leveler and then like obviously some EQ, you know, where needed. Is that sort of what you do?
I mean, I try to get by with, like, if I can get by with no compression, I do it. And if I can get by without reverb, I do. But, you know, EQ almost always happens to some degree. But I try to get by with nothing, you know, just play. I mean, there's the theory of, like, gold in, gold out, you know?
Yeah,
so
for sure.
So if you track it right, or not right, but if you track it with what you have in mind going in, then you don't have to mess with as much. But yeah, like a little compression, a little EQ, a little bit of reverb here and there. Those are my normal tools, and that's about it.
So where are you getting these? What tool set are you using for your plugins?
I'm using the Latspa. And what are the ones that their impulse response? You know what I'm talking about? I'll have to look up where those came from. And
wow, no, I don't know.
I'll have to get them because they're awesome. That's what I use for reverbs.
And they're just like they're plugins for Ardour or something. What are they?
They can be now. There's a guy that wrote a front end for them, and they work right in Ardour now. And they're like impulse responses of really fancy gear that
what?
I can't afford.
Wow.
And I mean, I heard about them for a long time, and I finally tried them out, and that's what I use for reverb now.
Okay.
And
all right.
Cool. I'll make sure I get
that.
Please
do. I'm interested. Yes, I would like to know about this.
And you know, of course, the guys in the open source musicians channel, they helped me out with getting all this stuff running, but. There's also a project called Jammin, J-A-M-I-N.
Yeah, I downloaded that. I don't know what to do with it yet.
Yeah, I mean, I use that. It depends on what I'm doing. Like, if I'm doing something and there's money involved, we'll pay for mastering. But if it's something where I'm in control of it till the end, I use that for mastering at the very end.
Okay, so, well, let's hold off on that for a minute then.
Sure.
So we've done the audio sweetening. Now I guess we just... Did you export the track, you bounce the tracks from Ardour and put them someplace and then bring them somewhere else? Or what's the next step for you?
I just do it all right there.
Okay. I'm believing you. So then
I put the plug, whatever plugins I'm going to use.
Uh-huh.
I just put them right there in the actual session, and I'm running, if it's eight tracks are running, and then I route them all through Jammin and export that way.
Okay. So what is mastering? What is this? What does that process entail? What's the goal for that?
In the most broad sense, you know, for mastering, you're really just wanting your project. Let's say you have four tracks. You're really just wanting those four tracks to work together. But you don't want to have like drastic volume changes between the tracks.
And yeah, so you want it
to kind of sound as... This is the trick. You got to kind of make it sound decent on any sound system. That's what costs you the money when you go talk to a mastering engineer and they want to charge you like, you know, $1,000 to do your album. That's what you're paying for, because they know how to do that.
How do they do that?
Yeah, it's I'm sure that they would not tell you. But you got to have all kinds of gear and experience, and also test speakers. You know, some of those guys got
Yeah.
Some of those guys just got like a boombox in the corner that's like ratty looking, but
yeah, yeah. Well, one the thing that I was already that I was always told in the like the one or two audio classes that we had in film school, which I mean, it's always embarrassing because it's like audio is such a huge part of, you know, filmmaking and stuff like that, and yet, you know, no film student out there has had more than like two audio classes. But the one thing that we were told was to try to make it sound good on like sort of like shoot for the lowest common denominator so that, you know, if it sounds good on your laptop speakers, then you can kind of assume that it's going to sound good everywhere else, you know. I don't know if that works. I mean, it's not great, but
there's definitely compromises that are made to make it work everywhere.
Yeah.
But the people who are professionals at it know how to do it and not, you know, they know how to walk that line and make it work.
Give me a visual image maybe of like what your desktop is looking like at this point, like where you know, you've done all your recording and your mixing and now you're doing your mastering. So you've got like Jack open, you've got Ardour open, you've got Jamin open. Is that sort of, and it's
I've got a two monitor rig going and I've got Ardour on my main window or my main monitor.
Yeah.
And I've got the mixer for Ardour on the other monitor, and I've got Jamin kind of translucent over top of that, you know,
with I use
Compiz on there, blame me, I don't know. Anyway, I can see through it, so I can see everything over there. And then I got Jack and the connection window open on another workspace
in case
I need to get to it. And then if I have any plugins, I don't use so many of those plugins anymore, but if I have any plugins that require, that aren't, or if I just need to see them, I'll have them open on another workspace or maybe translucent on top of Ardour or something.
You mean like the plugins that you have to actually pipe through Jack in order to use?
Or just a plugin I want to look at, like I want to watch the compression
of
the kick drum or something, you know, whatever.
Actually, I was going to say really quick that that's kind of a cool use for for Compiz, you know, to actually. It actually uses, it's a use that actually makes sense.
I know. I don't know how to see Jamin and my Ardour mixer at the same time on the same monitor without Compiz.
Right, yeah, that's really cool.
I mean, I don't have the cubes and I'd fire, you know?
Right.
But I need that, so I don't know.
Okay, so, I mean, I think that pretty much gives us a really good idea of kind of like how, of a typical musician's workflow. I mean, that's not really any different than mine, and
yeah.
I've talked to other people and kind of gotten feels for how they work, and it's all pretty similar, which is cool. It also sounds almost surprisingly to me like, I mean, I know that people in Open Source Musicians channel, I mean, all of them are like actually putting out music, you know, like they're recording, they're making music on Linux, so it's not like, it's not as hard as some people try to make it out to be, it sounds.
I think there's gear issues for some people. You know, if you're creating MIDI content, you can get that cleaner. You know what I'm saying? If the computer is generating synthesizers for you, you can really end up with a very professional sounding product and not have a very good interface or a microphone at all. Or even know what a preamp is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's awesome. I'm not here to say one's better than the other. I'm just saying if you want to record like your acoustic guitar, you might have to spend more money than that.
Like on a microphone and maybe soundproofing or something.
Yeah, whatever you want to spend, you can drop it on a microphone and a preamp.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think for people getting their feet wet and getting into it, you know, the MIDI's kind of the way to go.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's exactly what I started on in the computer sense. You know, it was just like, well, there's all these soft synths for free, and I can pipe them into Qtractor, and they sound great. Yeah.
You export, and it sounds like whatever those instruments, if they're sampled, they sound like they did when they recorded, when they were recorded wherever they were recorded. And I mean, for me, I was already playing music a lot, you know, I was already playing bass, and that's what I wanted to record was my instrument, and you know, I was already kind of like halfway down a path where I needed to spend some money, but
yeah, sure.
You don't need to spend a lot of money. You just got to get, I see a lot of people frustrated in like the Ubuntu Studio support channel because, you know, they're just trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents, you know, and sometimes you just got to go get some kind of USB interface and a nice mic and, you know.
That's a good point. That's a really good point because I think I was actually kind of there, and I think I kind of blame the ads out there, like the advertisements, because they always make it look like, oh, all you need is a laptop and an electric guitar, and you know, and you're like, that wouldn't work.
What's that one on the Apple, the guitar rig or whatever? It looks so easy, but it's not. Yeah, you still got to have a nice guitar and know how to play it.
Exactly. So I kind of blame that on a large degree. But
I agree.
In real life, you got to get a good setup, and then
now that doesn't mean that you can't drop like I think you can get a decent setup for doing overdubbing for under $200.
Yeah, you know? I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, but I know for
if you could spend $2,000,
right? What about for you? What about the whole real time kernel thing? Any input on that?
It depends on what I'm doing. You know, I definitely have. I should have mentioned this. I probably do this more so than other people. I have different jack profiles.
Oh, okay.
I'll start jack up with like, I forget what the whatever the settings are, but I'll start it up at like 60 or 80 milliseconds latency. Because who cares? You know, I'm mixing.
Okay.
You know, I don't care about if it takes like an extra half a second to get to my speakers because I'm mixing. But if I'm going to like, which I don't do very often, but let's say I'm going to get a guitar out and use Rack-A-Rack as like a live distortion sound.
Uh-huh.
I'll set my jack latency down at more like, you know, 1.2 or 2.4 milliseconds. Or if I'm going to be tracking in like a live synth sound, I'll do that with the lower latency settings. And I feel like I need in Ubuntu 10.04, I feel like I need that real-time kernel.
And that's kind of taken care of for you as a part of Ubuntu Studio, is that correct?
Well, actually, that kernel they brought over from 9.10.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So the kernel I'm using is, we were talking about Falk from the KX Studio project. I'm using his kernel there.
Do you happen to know if is that a 2.6.38 or above kernel? Or
it's a 3. It's a 3.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, ever since...
It's a 3-something now.
Okay, ever since 2. Dot...
No, that's where they are. I'm sorry, I'm testing kernels for...
I'm
all mixed. That's a 2.6. I can't remember. I'd have to look.
Okay, well, don't worry about it. I was just going to say, ever since 2.6.38.4, that is when, I guess, the big code block that someone submitted to... supposedly, seriously do away with, I guess, the need of like the real-time patches and stuff. Ever since that kernel, I have not had to patch for real-time when I compile my kernel.
I mean, I keep talking about Ubuntu Studio. I hang out in the Ubuntu Studio support channel all the time, and I try to help out there. That's what I try to tell people to do, is like try the generic one.
Yeah.
And then there's also another one called the low-latency kernel that we have that these guys are working on as well. I tell people to try that one too, you know, because it's kind of in the middle. The problem problem people have is they have a laptop and they get the real-time kernel.
Yeah.
And then maybe their Wi-Fi doesn't work or whatever and their battery's done, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't think we're very far from like not needing that patch anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, again, I don't do a whole lot of like live real life kind of stuff like you say, like a guitar and Rack-A-Rack stuff like that. I don't do that, so I could be wrong, but for me it has not been an issue.
I'll just boot it up and I'm looking. This is a 2.6.33.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
I think that's probably everything that I wanted to really ask you about. I feel like I don't know. It sounds very familiar what you've been talking about, and that's probably a good thing because it kind of people in the sound studios or in their little home studios with their fancy computers and expensive software applications that they shouldn't really be paying for anyway. You know, it's the same kind of workflow. So it's not like you have to totally readjust your whole head when you're coming over to free software.
No. I think it's more like, I mean, it's just like when you're trying to, not to open up a can of worms, but when you're trying to get people to transition from using Microsoft Office, you know,
they're
just used to the way Office looks and works.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but it really doesn't take that long. Ardour is not a big deal. It's Jack that's the one that's kind of has a learning curve. But you can come over and you don't have to use Jack right off. You know, I tell people like you fire up Audacity and just, you know, have a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm all for that. I use Audacity probably a lot more than I should. It's just such an easy and great little application, and you know, I'm so familiar with it. So yeah, it's really
nice. Works.
Yeah.
It works and it's simple.
Yeah, and it makes exactly it works. You know, if your goal is to make art, then just use whatever works until you can wrap your mind around whatever you're not understanding about something else.
There's nothing wrong. I call it like a gateway drug too, because it runs on Windows. You know, you can get you can get your Windows users over on it, and then they have more familiar apps to show up and use. So you know.
Yeah. Well, cool. Thanks again for coming on the
show.
Thanks
for having me. Yeah. Anytime.
And should you pimp any websites that you've got? Should we know about anything that you're working on?
Oh, I have a, it's just Mike Holstein, MikeHolstein.info. And I got my, I got a solo album up there. And
oh, cool.
I try to link to other projects there. And yeah, check it out.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot. Music in the background, of course, is not Holstein's music, but definitely go by his site, MikeHolstein.info, another info domain. I think that's a pretty big deal right there. Yeah, go by his website and check his music out. I think the real takeaway from this interview, aside from just really having a good time talking, kind of geeking out about the audio stuff on the operating system that we all know and love, is that the workflow on the audio side is just pretty much as complete as the video side of things. Because I didn't go to school for audio production, I can't pinpoint little things that an audio engineer would be accustomed to. Something that they might point to and say, well, you don't have such and such, how can I possibly use this platform? I don't know what they expect. I don't know the potential pitfalls. On the other hand, I do know that there are such things in the video world. There are such things when you're taking your video production over to the mixing desk or the mixing suite. There are certain things that you expect, and in the free software world, they may or may not be there in certain cases. I do know for a fact there are always little workarounds. So if someone's looking to switch, then it's really... there's nothing to be afraid of at all. It's a no-brainer. You can do that. As long as you've got a little patience and are okay with the fact that everything's not going to be exactly the same, then you're fine. If someone's reluctant to switch and you're kind of forcing it on them, then yes, they're gonna complain, they're gonna have problems. But this is the case with anyone who's not really wanting to switch over to Linux, and in some weird world they have to. Sadly, that world doesn't seem to exist all that common, all that often yet, but it is, you know, people don't like the change, we all know that, so we don't really need to analyze that in this context any more than we do in the context of an office worker not being able to use Microsoft Word instead of LibreOffice. The other takeaway, I think, from this interview and hearing how similar the workflow is and all that other stuff is, just like Kdenlive Live's color correction stuff, which I raved about, and I just thought, wow, this is great. I mean, heck, if I loved proprietary software and just was messing around with this free software stuff, that's a feature, the Kdenlive Live color correction. That's a feature I would like, and a couple of other things, too, the easy transcode function, a couple of things in Kdenlive Live. Those are things I would want to carry back with me to proprietary software. I would be disappointed that I didn't get to keep those things. As the case truly is, I'm kind of in this whole free software thing for the long haul. So, yay, I get to keep those features. Same thing as Holstein points out with Jack. I mean, there's not really an equivalent to Jack in the proprietary software. There's not really that kind of agnosticism in proprietary software. There's a very, very real incentive for companies to not work together, not let you as the user use different products from different companies in unison, which is insane, because in the hardware world, of course, that doesn't exist either. I mean, if you've got a Korg synthesizer and you've got a Waldorf synthesizer and you want to record them both together, you can do that. Nothing's going to keep you from doing that. So the fact that it exists in the software world is really unforgivable. And it's a big deal on free software that we should not undersell, that there's no such restriction in free software. There's no incentive for that to ever exist. And there's just not even a model set up for that. No one wants to go down that path on free software. And that's a really, really, and really there are paths set up so that you can't go down that way. So that's really powerful stuff. Do not undersell that. That's a big feature. as is, for instance, Jack and these little programs that maybe you can't really point to in proprietary world and say, well, this is just our version of that. So certain things are just our version. This is us. And that speaks to a larger movement and a larger path in free software, that free software is going down. And it is, we're building our own ecosystem, our own little environment. And at some point we may be so far off to the side that, yeah, we're going to be not in a bubble, but we're going to be our own thing. And it's going to be pointless almost to kind of look at the proprietary stuff and say, well, this is our version of that. Because now we've got our own infrastructure, and everything that we create relates to that core philosophy and that core methodology that we've developed, and we're developing that right now. And that's a big, big deal. It's really, really important, and it's very powerful. And this exists elsewhere. This isn't just us being segregationists or separatists, I guess would be the word. We're not being separatists. We're not saying we want to do things this way, and we're going to just do it for these other reasons. This happens, you know. If you look at the normal human being out there in the world right now, they're kind of going to work, they're going to their graphic design job, they're sitting down in front of their Photoshops, and they're doing their Photoshopping, and they import that over into InDesign, and then they pipe that out through Acrobat, and then they've got their thing that they send to the printer, or whatever their workflow is. That's actually probably what their workflow is. But anyway, that to them is normal, with a capital N. That's how it is done. It's what they were taught in school, and so that's kind of, anything other than that is its own world, right? And, you know, there are two paths to approach that sort of normalcy, or that perceived normalcy. One is to do what lots of little third-party, I guess you would call them cottage industry software developers do. They seek to say, okay, we're okay with this thing, this totem pole that is Photoshop. We're okay with that being the way everyone says it's going to be, and we're going to feed into that. We're going to make sure that everything we do gets a hook into Photoshop, and it's really easy to integrate. And basically, we're just kind of attaching ourselves onto this mega core Adobe thing. Now, there are other companies that seek not to do that and say, okay, we're going to do things a different way. And the biggest one of those, more or less, is a company called Corel. And you may have heard of them, you might not have. They're kind of the other Photoshop out there in the world. And there are, I don't know how many Corel shops there are, like there are Photoshop shops or houses, whatever you want to call them. But, you know, that's got a sort of a growing, well, we don't like Photoshop, we don't like Adobe, we want to get away from them, so we'll go over here. What's over here? Oh, look, there's a big shiny sign and it says Corel. So they're kind of their own ecosystem. So, I mean, there's this, this is how it works to some degree. You build up your own workflow, you build up sort of the philosophy and the way that things fit together, and what applications need to be plugged in where in order to end up with one larger project. The free software environment and philosophy that replaces that and is that is what we're talking about, what we've been talking about. You know, the workflow, the structure, here is what we need. Here are the pieces that we can grab from the real world and plug into our computer and manipulate them. Here's the software that we're going to need in order to manipulate them. Here's the next piece of software that we're going to need in order to get it to the next stage in the project development. And we're going to keep going down that path until at the end we have our artwork or our product or whatever it is. That's kind of the way software fits together and how things are formed and how complete, I guess, turnkey solutions are created. And that's what free software is really, really coming up with. And I think to a marvelous, marvelous degree now, I think free software has that. It's got turnkey solutions for major, major multimedia requirements. That's a big deal, because even just as early as when I got into Linux myself, I don't think all that was there. I mean, it was arguably there, right? people have been doing this sort of thing well before I got into Linux. People have been doing all kinds of cool art on Linux. So I come with my own expectations and my own definition of what the benchmark is, what the milestone is that we get to declare, yes, we're ready now for multimedia. And personally, I think that we can comfortably say, yes, okay, we're ready for multimedia. I'm not saying that further work shouldn't be done, because of course it always should be, but I really feel good about everything really coming together and fitting in nicely, and kind of having this thing where, as long as you can imagine what that end product looks like, and you think, and you look out there and look at all the free software available to you, you spend the time to learn the software, because obviously you do need to do that as well, and you're going to always have to do that on any platform. As long as you can do that, then you can get from here to there without ever leaving the free software ecosystem, which is really, really exciting. I'm going to leave you with my traditional Christmas ending to GNU World Order, a piece by classical composer Georges-Philippe Telemann. It's called L'Hiver. It's in D for flute or recorder, and it was recorded on Linux using both soft synths and acoustic instruments. So enjoy.